You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Parker McDonald, and this is episode number 32. Today, we are talking to turkey call maker Drew Abel from Foot on the Head. We're going to talk about their company, what they stand for, and we're also going to talk a little bit about why we like to chase these crazy birds around the wood. So stay tuned. This is going to be a good episode. All right, guys, thank you for tuning in to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. I'm pretty jacked up about today because, man, this conversation that I had with Drew Abel of Foot on the Head was pretty awesome. Now, Drew is a Alabama native. He lives in North Alabama, hunts birds in North Alabama and pretty much all over the state and the Southeast. And this guy is just a really cool dude. If you know anything about Foot on the Head, they make a really awesome calls. They and I couldn't say enough good things. They pay attention to detail with everything in the calls, and so we're really excited to be partnering with them on this episode. Now, here's the thing: if you follow us on social media, on Facebook at Southern Ground Hunting, you know that we are doing some big giveaways throughout the whole season. So we started last week. We gave away a Woodhaven Legend glass call that is freaking awesome. It was great. And this week we are giving away a pack from T3 Game Calls. So basically, here's how it works. If you're not following us on Facebook, first off, go do that, and you can see there how to win. But basically, we are partnering with several different companies. Like I said, Woodhaven, T3 Game Calls, Foot on the Head, Hunter's Addiction, Appalachian Game Calls, Kyle's Custom Calls, and Swamp Boys. And I think that's it. And we're partnering with these guys throughout this whole turkey season. We're giving away their stuff every single week. We're calling it the Gobble Butt Giveaway. And we're giving away calls every single week during turkey season, probably through May, maybe mid-May. So I know for us here in Alabama, our turkey season ends on April the 30th, I believe, or 31st. And so if you win a call in May, you'll have to wait until next year to use it unless you're hunting other states. But, man, we're just super grateful for all these companies sending us gear to give to you guys. I know a lot of people are going to be very happy when they win. So, like I said, go on to Facebook at Southern Ground Hunting and check that out. It's all through Facebook. All of these giveaways are going to be through the Facebook page. It's the Gobble Butt Giveaway. And I've had a couple people ask me why I called it Gobble Butt. I really don't know. I don't have a good explanation for that other than if you listen to the last episode with Adam Cruz, we were talking about, you know, just turkey hunting and how frustrating it can be. And I said it's kind of like the most frustrating sport, but also the most satisfying sport, because the majority of the time the birds do not do what you want them to do. It almost seems like they're running away from your calling, and it's just frustrating. So I was trying to think of a word that I could accurately describe my feelings towards turkeys, and gobble butt is just kind of the first one that I came up with. So go check that out. We're doing those giveaways with those awesome companies. Now, next week, if you're listening to this when it comes out, this will come out on Friday, and tomorrow we'll be announcing the winner of the T3. It's like a pot call, three different diaphragm calls and a T3 custom calls hat. So if you're listening to this on Friday when it comes out, then you still have time to enter in for that. But next week, we are going to be giving away some really cool stuff from Foot on the Head. And in this episode, Drew talks about the package that he's giving away, and it all sounds super stinking cool. So be on the lookout for that. I'm trying to think. So I've had a pretty good day today. I'm kind of taking it easy and relaxing, and I'm not going out in the woods because yesterday I killed my first bird of the season on public land, and man, we may have to do a full episode about that because it was the most intense turkey hunt I have ever been on. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail on it, but it is on video, and I'm working on editing that video right now. And it was just intense. And as you guys know, I kayak to my spots, and so this was the first legitimate blood that I've been able to get on the new canoe, my new canoe, and I was so excited. He was a good bird, probably a two-year-old bird. Yeah, it was pretty intense, and I was able to call him away. Him and his hen came up the ridge looking for me, and I was able to actually call him away from her. She left, called him away from her, and shot him. It was cool. It was probably about 45 minutes from the time I first heard him till the time I killed him, and it was 30 minutes, 27 minutes of me freehand holding my gun up in an awkward position and my legs cramping because I was watching him and I couldn't move. And the video is going to be really good. I think you guys are going to enjoy that. That's going to be on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel, so make sure you go and subscribe to that channel. There's a lot of cool hunting content. We've already put a couple turkey videos up, but this is going to be our first kill video that will be on the channel for this year. As always, we want to give a huge shout out to our partners at OnX Maps, at Tethered, at New Breed, and at Go Wild. So if you are not familiar with Go Wild, I'm going to urge you guys to check it out. Go Wild is a fairly new social media application on your smartphone, iPad, whatever, and it is, think of Instagram, but for outdoorsmen. You can see all kinds of content from fishing, hunting, hiking, cooking, anything you can think of in the outdoors is on Go Wild, and you can just basically go and check out the content that you want to see. So there's all kinds of different categories, and you can follow those categories and see people all over the country posting about the things that you and I both love and enjoy. So go and check out Go Wild. Go download it on the App Store, and I think you will not be disappointed. It's a great application. I spent a lot of time on it. I actually waste probably more time on it just daydreaming and looking at other people's stuff, but that's okay because that is why we love this sport, because it keeps us going 100% of the time. We're always thinking about it. And so if that's you, go check out Go Wild. So I'm not going to talk too much more. Like I said, there's going to be a turkey kill video up on the YouTube channel, so go subscribe to Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. You're not going to be disappointed about that. Also, again, I'm going to tell you guys, go and check out the Facebook page at Southern Ground Hunting if you want to learn more about how to win some of these awesome turkey calls. But that's enough of me. Let's get into our conversation with Mr. Drew Abel of Foot on the Head. All right, on the line now, we have Mr. Drew Abel from Foot on the Head. Is that how you say it? Is that right, Drew?
Yeah, man, that's right. Foot on the head.
Foot on the head. Not the head. Not foot on the head. It's foot on the head.
That's right.
All right, so you got to tell me where who came up with that name, and how did that name
happen? So it's funny because a lot of people, you know, really ask, you know, we get all kinds of people asking, man, what's that about? What's that name about? Or they come up to you and they're like, man, we really love that name, you know. So you obviously know those people are turkey hunters. And they get it, because when you kill a turkey, that's the first thing that you do majority of the time, is you go out there and you stand on his head.
Mm-hmm.
And so honestly, once I kind of got to the age, the 16, where I could drive myself and hunt by myself and everything, my dad and I would send pictures back and forth to each other saying, foot on the head. And later on in life, once I started to come out with calls and started to sell some products and things like that, I had to have a name. And so I asked Dad, I said, well, what should I call it? And he was like, oh, that's easy. What do we text each other every spring? You know, foot on the head. And I was like, you know what? I kind of like it. It's kind of unique. Diehard turkey hunters, or just really anybody that turkey hunts, will understand it and get it. And so honestly, that was kind of it. It was a really easy conversation, really easy to come up with for us.
I really like it too. It's got that creative thing. Nobody's ever going to forget about it. Once you hear the name, you're going to remember it. I think I heard the name a couple years ago, and man, I've remembered it ever since then. So,
That's awesome.
So that's cool, man. Drew, we really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about some stuff, talking about turkey hunting, which a lot of the South is concentrated on. I know I think I've went like 3 or 4 times and they've kicked my butt so hard that I'm already ready for the season to be over. but I know a lot of guys are super excited about the season. Some of the states haven't even started yet. And so people are jonesing for that. So we really do appreciate you coming on the show. And I'm excited about talking about some turkey hunting with you, buddy.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you having us and having me, man. I always enjoy talking turkey and talking about turkey hunting. I know that they can drive everybody crazy at times, and that's just honestly, that's part of why we love it so much, is because of the hatred and drive that we have for the animals. But man, I just love it. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So speaking of the hatred and the drive, I don't know if it's a hatred. I wouldn't say it that. I respect the wild turkey about as much as any animal. They've outsmarted me more than enough times to deserve my respect. So, but we're doing this giveaway through the podcast, and it's called the Gobble Butt Giveaway. And I was trying to think of a name that expressed my feelings about turkeys. Like,
yeah,
when I think of a turkey, I really think, God, those things are just such buttheads. And gobble and butt, and it just kind of all goes together. And that's the cool thing about this episode, is because next week, this episode drops on Friday. It's the first Friday in April. And you guys are going to be donating some of your gear for next week's giveaway, which is starting on Monday. So can you do this, Drew? Can you go ahead and talk about, if you know already, we haven't talked about this, if you know what you're going to be donating already and what we're going to be giving away, can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, definitely. So it's going to be kind of a combo pack. I've got a pot call, and then I've got 3 of our hand-cut mouth calls. So the pot call is actually bronze glass over slate. And the unique thing about this call is that you can't get bronze glass anymore. None of the suppliers can get a hold of it. I'm not honestly even sure if they make it anymore, but it's got a really unique sound to it. It plays kind of similar to crystal instead of glass. So that's one thing that's really interesting about the pot call is that this is it. This is everything that we have basically left of it. As far as the hand-cut mouth calls go, I put a 3-pack together, and I try to put some good variety in there of what our different calls will sound like. I put a clear one that's usually more clear for most people when they run it, one that's a little bit more raspy. And then usually I put one in there that is either quiet or one that cuts really well. It's kind of dependent upon who's chosen what they would rather have.
Okay.
So we kind of go that route with it most of the time. Just try to get a variety out there. That way people can have some different calls when they go in the woods that sound different, you know, to imitate different turkeys.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And man, if you guys have not already heard of Foot on the Head and their gear and their calls, man, I'm telling you, just go on YouTube, check out some videos of people running them, go follow them on Facebook, go to the website, just check those calls out because they sound really good. Man, and I cannot wait to give those things away. I know somebody's going to be super pumped about it. And so if you are listening to this right now on Friday when it first comes out, make sure you stop by the Southern Ground Facebook page next week, which is Monday, starting on Monday. I've been putting it out somewhere between 7 and 9 o'clock in the morning. I've been putting out the posts, and go and follow those rules, and you'll have a chance to win these calls. Man, I didn't even know that about, what'd you call it? It was like bronze glass?
Yeah, bronze glass. It's kind of honestly a thing from the past, but it's some really good stuff. I've got this call left that's made with it. And then I've got about 8 pieces left that I haven't glued up yet or anything. I'm trying to come up with something special for those last 8 pieces that I have.
That's pretty cool, man. Well, hey, I think this is special. So kudos on that one.
Yeah.
But, well, cool, man. So I know you told me that you're feeling a little bit under the weather right now. And what did you say? You had strep throat?
Yeah, man, I've got strep throat. So I work for the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources here in Alabama as a wildlife biologist.
Okay.
And we had an adult mentored turkey hunt this weekend down in South Alabama. So basically what we do as a department is people fill out an application. Then these people are handpicked from these applications. Majority of them have never picked up a firearm, have never stepped foot in the woods to hunt an animal. But have the desire to do so and have never really had the opportunity or had anybody teach them how to hunt. And so we were at that hunt this weekend just south of Selma, and it was, I guess it was Saturday night. We were going to get up and hunt Sunday morning with our mentees. And, man, it was about midnight, and I woke up and just had the chills and was sweating and freezing cold and body aching.
Oh, no.
So as soon as I got back to Huntsville, ran to the doctor and was tested positive for strep throat. So unfortunately, this is the wrong time of year to have strep throat,
dude.
Because I now have to use my sick leave because I'm actually sick.
Oh no! Oh, I can relate to that though, man. My vehicle just broke down a couple days ago, or about a week ago, and I talked about it to you. I don't think I've actually talked about it in the podcast yet, but I missed a bird. I think it was last Friday, I missed a bird, the very first bird that's given me an opportunity this year. And, dude, it was one of those moments that just worked out perfectly. And I called him in right off the roost. He came running at me, and I just missed. Well, that evening, my vehicle broke down, so I had to get it towed to a shop, and I just got it back today. And that bird has just been haunting me, man. Like, knowing that he was there, and he was killable, and I had no way of transportation to get out there to go try to kill him. It's been rough. So I can understand where you're coming from, man, where it's like, this is not the right time of year. Like, I can go through a lot of crap as long as it starts happening around June and July. Like, when there's nothing going on, June and July is when I want to go through car problems and all that crap, because this is not the right time of year for it.
That's exactly right. We get 45 days to do this, and we want to chase them as much as we can during those 45 days.
That's spot on, man. So you said you work at the Alabama Department of Conservation. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm a wildlife biologist. I actually work in Decatur, Alabama, as a waterfowl guy. I look over Swan Creek and Mallard Fox WMAs. So that's kind of what I do as a day job right there.
Okay. That's awesome, man. That's just right up the road. Do you do a whole lot with the Wheeler Wildlife Refuge?
So about the only thing that we really do with Wheeler is we'll band some wood ducks during the summer on Wheeler,
okay,
on the north side of the river there. So that's about all that we do. Every now and then we'll have a little project that goes hand in hand and work with Wheeler and the guys over there, but really not as much as a lot of people think that we do.
Okay. Yeah. It's, there's a good and bad thing about being a wildlife biologist around Wheeler. The good thing is there's not a whole lot of wildlife in Wheeler, so you don't really have much to worry about. That's in my experience. I have terrible luck at Wheeler. So you do a lot of this stuff with waterfowl. So I'm interested to know, man, like, how was that kind of like what got you started into turkey? Or did the turkeys lead you kind of in the direction of waterfowl stuff?
No, so just the management aspect, honestly, kind of, led me into this field. I really love habitat manipulation, cause and effect behind things. You know, if I plant this, if I manipulate this, how does, you know, wildlife react to it? How do they use it? How do they not use it? So really, that was kind of my driving factor into going into this field. I would say that I always thought that waterfowl work would be really special, that there would be something different about it because you get to see that reaction, you know, to the manipulation that you do. so quickly.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, you know, during the spring and summer is when we, you know, plant our crops, is when we manage our ground, and then we start adding water, you know, October-ish, somewhere in there. And then you see the result of it immediately after you start adding water. Whereas if you're doing work with deer or with turkeys, you're talking about when you start a deer project, you know, you're going to see results really 3 to 4 years down the road, if not, you know, later than that. And with
right.
turkeys, if you don't have large amounts of acreage to really manage together, it's going to be kind of tough to see an impact, you know, especially on smaller acreage farms. So that's kind of really why I love waterfowl management. Honestly, didn't think that I would get the opportunity to do it, just because I wanted to be here in Huntsville where I'm from, with family, things like that. I'm fine doing other work. But this opportunity presented itself. I didn't have to go to Arkansas or Missouri or somewhere like that. And so honestly was really blessed to get this opportunity to move back home and to deal and manage with waterfowl day in and day out.
Man, that's really neat. And it's really a good place for it. You know, I know, out here in Alabama, where you're at is kind of a destination spot for waterfowlers. Anybody
yeah,
I know
that's right.
around here, around Coleman, where I live, man, they're heading up north around Huntsville and Decatur and those kind of areas. And so, that's really neat, man. I actually did not even know that before we got on the phone this afternoon. So that's really cool. I knew you were working for the Department of Conservation, but I didn't know in full what all you did. So, man, that's really cool. And I can speak for outdoors men and women all over Alabama and say thank you for what you do. That's really, really neat.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this for a second. So we've been in turkey season now for about 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks in the state of Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And man, I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like I'm the only person in the whole state that hasn't killed a bird yet. Facebook
no,
and Instagram
man, not
has,
at all. There's plenty of them.
Yeah, Facebook and Instagram's kind of ruined it for everybody. It doesn't leave any mystery on who's killing birds and who's not. So I got to ask you, man, have you had any luck already?
Yeah, man, I have. I've been able to go a decent bit already, and I've got to kill one. I got to call one in for my dad one morning and watch him shoot one. So it's been a good season. We've been in birds. We've had a couple hunts. We haven't done very much, but we've also had a couple really good hunts. The one hunt where I got to kill one, honestly, my dad has called in so many turkeys for me on open day through the years that I've always wanted to repay the favor, you know, to him. And we didn't get to kill one on opening day this year, but it was, I guess it was that Thursday after the opener. Him and I had been on these turkeys, and they had been roosting down at the bottom. So we hunted in Jackson County, you know, kind of mountainous terrain up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, we had been hunting about halfway up this mountain. And there had been some birds gobbling down right on the edge of this road. And honestly, every morning they gobbled, I was 99% sure that they were across this paved road. And so we had kind of been on some other birds about middle of the ways up in the mountain and everything. And so one morning we go up there, I guess it was the Tuesday morning, we go up there and they're not there, but there's some birds down at the bottom again. And I'm just frustrated, you know, birds are at the bottom and we've done walked all the way up this daggum mountain, you know. And I told him, I said, well, we didn't hear anything else gobble, let's go down there. So we start heading that way. Well, that actually ended up being roosted on our side of the road. Everything on the other side of the paved road is private. We don't have permission to hunt it or anything like that. But this side of the road, we did have permission to hunt. And so we got in there real tight on the birds. There was three longbeards together, and they actually pitched down. The hens pitched down first, and they went right to the hens. They got on a little narrow bench, and we were able to kind of get pretty decently close to them, about 70 yards, using some cover of some big rocks and stuff. And we tried to back call them. Basically, the hens were in front going away from us, and we got as close as we could without being seen and tried to maybe pique one's interest enough to where he would turn around and come look, but he didn't. And so fast forward to Wednesday, we didn't even go. My dad was tired, didn't want to get up and go, so we skipped Wednesday. Thursday morning rolls around. We go right back down there on the mountain where the turkey's been roosted. I mean, we got there just a tad bit late, and I really didn't think that we were late, but apparently we were because we busted a hen out of the tree. And so we were like, well, obviously turkeys are here. Let's sit down and just see how it goes. And we sat down. Daylight comes up, and turkeys across the valley start gobbling. And we hadn't heard anything on our side, and it was honestly been kind of odd because we had heard a good many birds on this place already. And finally, one strikes up above us. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, we've been up this mountain every single day. You know, they've been at the bottom, and now we're at the bottom, and this joker's at the top. Like, and I just literally, when that turkey gobbled, and I knew exactly where he was, I just leaned back against the tree and just took a deep breath because I was already frustrated. And, you know, we really didn't have much of an option. It was kind of like, well, if we want to hunt a turkey today, you know, we're going to be walking up. So we started cutting up this mountain towards this bird, and he flew down and was gobbling a decent bit. Probably had gobbled, I don't know, 10 or 12 times. We hadn't been calling at him or anything, just kind of slowly. You know, we walked 30 or 50 yards, and then he'd gobble. You know, we could kind of pinpoint him a little better. And finally, we got to a spot, and I stopped and looked at my dad. He was like, I think we need to wait for him to gobble. And I said, I really want to get to this next bench up to kill him. And I said, I think that's where we need to be. And he gobbled, and it was one of those, you know, when they get close and you can hear that roll and that thunder in their chest, and you could hear that thunder. So we were like, hey, we both knew we couldn't go any further. So we sat down, and I keep a wing with me, and I just pulled it out and scratched the leaves a couple of times. And we had plans, you know, for my dad to kill this turkey, you know, because that was going to be one of my small favors in repaying him. And the turkey actually came down the hill on my side of the tree, and he couldn't turn. And I said, you're going to have to turn to kill this turkey. And he said, I can't turn. He said, you kill him. And I said, are you sure? And he said, yeah. And so turkey got to about 30 steps, and I clucked one or two times, and he stopped, and I was able to kill him. But it was kind of unique because we didn't call it the turkey at all except to get him to stop. We just scratched the leaves. And the time we sat down, the time we killed him was probably about 3.5 minutes. It didn't take him long at all. He didn't have any hens with him. He was just honestly just ready to play the game.
Wow. So y'all, he wasn't coming to any calls that y'all had done down the hill or anything like that. It was just the scratching.
Yep, just scratching the leaves, man. And, you know, to me, one of the big things that I'm about is just, you know, being realistic when I hunt. Whether it's in my calling or whether it's how I walk down a road or whether it's scratching the leaves, you know, any type of realism like that I can throw into the mix that adds just an extra flavor to it is what we try to do. Sometimes it works, sometimes it helps, you know, sometimes it doesn't. But mm-hmm. I don't think that it ever hurts to add that realism into your arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. When I think about probably the last – I don't know, man. Probably the last five really good encounters I've had with gobblers, it's been, I would say probably the last five of them have all been not because I was calling and they were coming to a call. It was mm-hmm. all just played smarter, you know, and realistic. You know, the one that I missed the other day is probably the closest one. I called like twice, I think, at him, just to try to pinpoint where he was at a little bit better. And then he came just about straight to me. And then last year, it was scratching in the leaves. That's what brought that bird in. I hadn't probably called in about 30 minutes, and it was in the middle of the day, and he came just kind of strolling by. 2 years ago on opening day, I had a tom come in, and I had never even hit the call. I was sitting on the edge of a field on a hunting club I was on, and I was just like breaking branches to build a little ground blind. And I sat down, and he was standing in the corner just looking for it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm on board with you, man. I think probably the best advice anybody's ever given me is don't call as much as you think you should. And
uh-huh.
And that's been some pretty solid advice. Not that I'm a great turkey hunter, but – it's helped me in the past.
Yeah, definitely. You know, any time, you know, and a lot of people get hung up and been out of shape about, you know, being quiet when you're in the woods and walking quietly. I can't tell you how many birds that I've struck up, you know, just walking. It's not like I try to walk loud and make all kinds of noise, because I don't, you know, I mean, I do try to be quiet. I could probably be a little quieter than I am when I walk through the woods sometimes. But I can't tell you how many birds that I've struck, or maybe even had come to me or start gobbling, because they hear me walking and they think that it's a hen or another turkey, you know, scratching in the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, that's definitely something that needs to, you know, that you need to be aware of when you hunt. It's not always about calling. There's another aspect to it as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so you killed that bird. How was it? Was it pretty soon after that you were able to call in the bird for your dad?
Yeah, so it was actually 6 days later. We had gone, and he had heard this turkey. He was hunting the day before out in this big field on one side of a river, and basically heard the bird up on the mountain on the other side of the river. And so the next morning, he said, "Hey, let's go to that place." And we got up there, and we kind of had an idea on where we thought the bird would be. And so we get set down in the dark and everything. And it gets daylight. Turkeys start gobbling again on the other side of the valley and down in the bottom off this property that we have. And all of a sudden, this bird strikes, and he's way far to the north, and we're kind of honestly caught off guard by it. So I asked him, I said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "You know, you're behind the gun." I said, "We can get up and go, or we can sit here and wait, see if one's closer." And he said, "Let's go." So we kind of cut out to him, and he gobbled honestly really, really good. I mean, there was one point where I think he gobbled, I mean, I know for a fact he gobbled at least 10 times in a row on his own, just nonstop, one after the next. And so we got as close as we could to him on the limb, sat down. There was this big oak tree that had fallen over, and we sat behind it. Dad propped his gun up on the tree and everything. And I tree up to the turkey one time. He cut me off. And a lot of times when they do that, when they cut me off on the limb, I'm not going to keep calling to them or anything until they hit the ground. I see the turkey pitch. It pitched actually below us. And so Dad was kind of sitting up the hill to my left a little bit, and the bird pitched to my right. And so I thought, "Oh, Lord, please don't let this turkey come in below us, because I'll have to shoot it again, you know?" And that's not the plan. And so I yelped a couple times and kind of tried to throw my call, you know, up the mountain a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, the turkey cut me off, and it wasn't probably 3 or 4 minutes later. I hear him spitting and drumming. After I hear him drumming and stuff, it's probably another 3 or 4 minutes, and I can see his fan coming through the woods and everything. And I tell Dad, I said, "Get your gun ready." He's actually to the left of your gun barrel a little bit. So he gets ready and on the gun, and the turkey walks up on a little point about 40 yards from us. And, I mean, he stands there and he's gobbling, and then he'll blow up and strut and spit and everything. And then, of course, like a turkey does, you know, after he, you know, starts strutting, he'll come out and he'll look for that hen, you know, because the hen, you know, in nature is supposed to go to them. And he'll look and look, and then he'll strut again, and then he'll look, and he did that for probably 5 or 6 minutes, and I was like, "Man, I don't think the turkey's going to come." And my dad hadn't shot yet because there was a big tree between him and this bird, and he couldn't even see it.
Hmm.
And so I didn't really want to do this because I was in plain view of the turkey, but I just lightly yelped for like 2 or 3 notes. And he kind of started looking, and since my dad couldn't see him and we've hunted together for so long, he could understand why I was actually calling to that bird at that point in time. So since he couldn't see the bird and we were behind this big blow down tree, he started scratching the leaves again. And man, that turkey could not stand it. And he put that head down and walked down the edge of this bench another 10 steps and came out behind this big rock. And as soon as he came out behind that rock, my dad let him have it. He was I think he was 32 yards and my dad shot him.
Wow, man, that's so much fun. I've got so many good memories like that with my dad as well. And how old are you, Drew?
Man, I turned 28 next week.
Okay. All right. So me and you are pretty close to the same age. So a cool story for me is that I actually got to be with my dad when he killed his first turkey and when he killed his first deer.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And those trips were actually the funny thing is that was all in the same day. He killed his first turkey and his first deer during the fall in Texas. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, all in the same day. And that trip, I was about 7 years old. And dude, I remember it. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was like where the bug actually, like, that's where it hit me. And
yeah,
and getting to be there with my dad when he did all those cool things, and then of course him getting to be with me every single time, or for all those early memories, man. Like, he lives in Texas still, and I live in Alabama, and I would do anything to be able to just call him up and be like, "Hey, let's go chase some turkeys today." Like, so that story, man. I know a lot of guys. That resonates with a lot of people about how special those moments are like that. Dude, it sounds like your turkey season is already off to a pretty solid start. We still got today's April 1st, man, so we still got another, 30 days in Alabama?
Yeah, that's right.
We got another 30 days, and so, man, I'm expecting to see a whole lot more stories coming out from your neck of the woods. It's going to be a good season, man. I've already made up my mind that I'm not going to get to hunt as much as I usually do, but I'm going to make the most of it. So let's get into the really good stuff, and not that that wasn't awesome, but let's get into the stuff about your business, about what you're passionate about foot on the head and kind of what you're doing with that and where you see yourself going in the future. So, man, I'm just going to let you go. I'm just going to turn you loose. Tell me about how you started and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, man. So I got, man, it was my freshman year of college. I had actually gone to Mississippi State. That was not the plan, but ended up, that was where the Lord had me to go. And so I'm in Mississippi, obviously a big turkey hunter and everything. And, you know, just in my free time in college, I really picked up a lot of turkey calls and tried to become a lot more proficient at it. My love for the sport was already there, but I wanted to be the best turkey hunter that I could be. And one of the ways that I thought I could do that is by becoming a more realistic and a better turkey caller. Now I could, you know, kill a turkey every now and then. I wasn't the world's best, still not the world's best. But you know, I thought, man, if I can just become more realistic in my calling, if I can sound more like a turkey, if I could do more of these calls, you know, then I probably have a better chance of killing more birds each spring. And so that was kind of my goal. Not only that, I was frustrated with calls that were on the market, especially diaphragm or mouth calls, because, you know, you buy one and, man, you buy 10 more of the same one from the same company, and you can't even get one that sounds similar to the first one that you bought that you love so much. And so I just thought, hey, let's learn how to make these things. And that way, you know, I can have quality calls. That will help me to be, you know, a better quality caller, you know, by having more consistency inside of that. And so I just honestly started researching it and looking up what I needed and saved my money. I bought a competition style press, basically, is what it is, and started building some mouth calls just for the fun of it, you know, to be a better hunter and caller. One thing led to the next, and buddies that were in the wildlife program there with me were like, man, why don't you build me a couple calls? And, you know, I need a couple calls for spring and blah, blah. So I was building calls for them too, and then their buddies were coming to me, hey, I need some mouth calls. And next thing I knew, I'm building, you know, 500 calls a year, getting rid of them and stuff. And I'm like, well, maybe I should, you know, try to sell a few and that type thing. And so honestly, that's kind of how it got started. One thing just led to the next. And then I thought, well, what about some of these other calls? Like, let me start looking into building those. And that's when I came out with pot calls and box calls and strikers and locator calls and kind of all of the above. But honestly, I started this out as just a hobby to be a better hunter and to be a better caller and a better killer. And, you know, it's kind of evolved and morphed into something else, which I'm really excited about. At the end of the day, what I want to do is I want to provide a tool for you, Parker, for anybody else out there that wants to go out and kill a turkey, I want to provide a tool that's going to give them an advantage in the woods. I want to give them a tool that they're confident in, that they believe in, but also a tool that they can come back to me and say, hey, you built this stall for me. I want another one, and I can produce five more, you know, as close to being the exact same as I can. Now, there's always a little inconsistency with human error involved, you know. But I take a lot of time in these calls. I use the highest quality materials that I can get. And that's what it's all about for me, honestly. It's just being able to provide the highest quality product as far as calls go on the market. You know, hopefully get people more confident and in themselves while they're in the woods turkey hunting. And hopefully, you know, they'll see more success in the woods because of that.
So let me ask you this, Drew. So yeah. You said...
Yeah.
Part of the reason why you started doing it is because you wanted to be better at turkey hunting, and I can relate to that. Like, I feel like I am I'm a better outdoorsman, I'm a better deer hunter, I'm a better turkey hunter since I started doing this podcast and doing a YouTube channel. And part of that is because I'm immersing myself in those type of conversations, in those groups, you know, online, and I'm researching things, and I'm, you know, even if I'm just researching something for the podcast, I'm talking to very smart people and learning things from them over and over and over again, and it's just kind of, I've become like a sponge, and I'm getting to absorb that. So, is that kind of something that happened for you with getting into the industry? Is it kind of indirectly just made you better just because of who you were with and the conversations you were having?
Yeah, man, I would say so for sure. I think that no matter what you do in life, if you want to be good at it, if you want to be great at it, then that's something that you really have to do. You have to just dive in. You have to meet everybody that you can meet. You have to read every article that you can. And you just got to become fully immersed in it, like you said. And not only that, but you really got to pay attention to it, because you can immerse yourself in something, but if you're not trying to learn, if you're not trying to get better, then it's not really going to soak in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely say that when I started building these calls, I started paying attention to a lot more details, that I started looking at things from a lot of different perspectives that I had never looked at things before. And man, when that happens, that's when your knowledge just really starts growing, and you understand more. And then when you understand more, that desire and urge to like know more keeps growing, and it kind of becomes a snowball effect, honestly.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that, man. And I see it time and time again. You know, people who are, there are definitely people who, you know, nobody knows them, but they're killers. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's people who are not a part of the industry. They're not a part of, you know, they're not, you know, like you, they're not wildlife biologists. They're just people who probably work a regular 9-to-5, and they are absolute killers. But it's not because they're still doing their homework. They're still doing all of the stuff that we're talking about. It may not be in the public eye, but yeah, I would challenge anybody, if you want to be better, do what Drew's talking about. Immerse yourself into it, and man, just watch how everything starts to unravel, and the things you start to learn. Man, that's really cool to hear that. You know, because a lot of people, and I don't want to call anybody out or talk any names, but a lot of people who are doing what you're doing, Drew, and doing calls and you know, kind of jumping into that industry, they're doing it so they can make a quick dollar. And, you know, it's neat to hear of guys like yourself who, you know, that wasn't even a part of it starting out. It was just, hey, I just want to be better. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's honestly kind of still where we are. We've had the opportunity to, you know, get in some outdoor stores and to sell calls there. And I try to do a handful of stores around here, you know, to honestly to support them. And I know it really helped them. It helped me too. But really at the end of the day, I would rather grow organically like that, you know, and sell calls directly through me online, on Facebook, on Instagram, places like that. Because what that's going to do is, man, that just gives me more time, you know, to produce these calls. I'm not having to push out, you know, 20,000 calls a year to put in all these retail stores, you know. Mm-hmm. I can sell, you know, 2,000 to 3,000, 4,000 calls a year, but I can ensure that when I sell that many calls a year, that they're high quality calls and somebody's going to get something that they love. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And at the end of the day, this isn't my day job. This isn't what I do for a living. This is a hobby that I love to do. That's kind of what it's about for me, honestly.
That's amazing. And that's super cool. So coming out of what you said, your freshman year in college is when you started doing it.
Yeah.
Where did that go from there? Like, you kind of became the call dealer, it sounds like, around Mississippi. And, how did the rest of it kind of play out?
Yeah. So I started everything off with just diaphragm calls. And kind of like I said, it was just making calls for buddies and then, you know, buddies of buddies and that type thing. And so once that happened and I was getting rid of so many calls a year, I was like, you know what, let's try to make a little bit of money at this thing to cover my calls, to cover my materials, and maybe meet some cool people in the industry and that type thing and build some relationships. And so after I got a pretty decent line of mouth calls established, and I had kind of a customer base, everybody was coming back to me and was like, man, when are you going to come out with pop calls? Man, I really would like it, you know, you to come out with box calls or, you know, something else other than mouth calls. Like, when are you going to grow? And it was honestly something that I never expected. But these guys just kept asking me and asking me and asking me about it. And I was like, there's obviously a demand here. There's obviously a want and a desire and a need by these people. So let's look into it. And so I just started kind of doing some research, honestly, pretty much every night on the computer, and drove some people, like my roommates, crazy because all I talked about was turkeys and calls, and they got tired of me yelping on calls all day, every day. But one thing kind of led to another. I got a couple box calls built. Got a couple pop calls built, kind of perfected those a little bit, perfect those pretty much every year by trying different things with them. But that's kind of how it started going. And basically, man, what it looks like for here on out for the future is, we've kind of had our same call line for the most part for the past 3 or 4 years. I'll kind of release this on here, I guess. We're working on some R&D right now for some new calls, spot call wise and box call wise, to release for next year. So that's something neat that we're looking into that you know, we'll hopefully release some new calls for next year.
And you said this is the first kind of, this is the announcement of it, right? Is that what you just said?
This is the announcement of it. We haven't really told a lot of people except the guys that are, you know, just using the calls. So that's pretty neat. We're really excited
cool.
about that. We're really excited about what it's going to do for people when they get these calls in their hands and the realistic sounds that these calls will produce and the ease that these calls will produce those sounds at. So we're looking at that. We've got a couple other products that we're looking at developing and coming out with as well. So it's kind of, again, it's one of those things, man, that we're all about the quality of it. We're going to be the highest quality that we can be. And so we try to keep that in mind in everything that we do. We're not necessarily looking to produce stuff at just the cheapest rate, but man, we want the highest quality that we can get.
That's awesome, man. That's really neat. I'm just kind of blown away right now. Like, that's pretty cool to be announcing that right here. So you guys who are listening to this, you need to feel special right now because, I feel like this is a pretty big announcement. It's a pretty big deal for you guys over there, Drew. That's really neat. I'm excited to see all the stuff that you're doing in all that. So speaking to that though, obviously you have another full-time job. And did you say y'all were producing anywhere around 4,000 calls a year? Is that kind of what you're doing?
Yeah, close to that number.
Okay. So do you have any plans to kind of like expand that? Do you have people that work for you, that help you out? How does the future look for what you guys are doing?
Yeah. So as far as that goes, man, like right now I'm the one, I build everything. Every call that you buy from me with the foot on the head name on it is built by me. in my little office in this house after I get home from my day job.
Wow.
And it's awesome. So I've got a 19-month-old little boy at the house, you know, a wife here. And so it can kind of create some stress, you know,
sure,
as far as that goes. And so with the expansion, it is something that I'm looking at. It's having some other guys help me. I've already got some guys right now that really help me with these calls. My best friend growing up, he runs all my social media stuff for me. So he's very influential and helps me out a whole lot with that. He lives in Auburn. He sells a bunch of calls down there for me. I've got another guy that was actually his roommate down there and met Hunter Ward through my buddy Logan. Hunter just got married and moved to Huntsville. And so he helps me a lot, whether it's at shows like the National Wild Turkey Federation Convention in Nashville. Hunter really helps me with my packaging a lot. We do a couple other like small shows here in Huntsville. And Hunter usually handles that, takes care of that for me. So I've got some guys, man, that really help me out all the time. I'm looking, you know, for people to kind of test the products, to kind of help me with that aspect of it a little bit, that are kind of some killers. But I've kind of got a little core group right now that's really good, that we've become really close, really good friends through this. And even before that, honestly, but that's kind of how I'm looking at growing, is these couple of other guys that really helped me out already, maybe giving them a little bit more responsibility, I guess, whatever you want to call it, a little bit more ownership. Probably in the next year, if not sooner than that, having somebody help me build calls, because it is, it's really kind of starting to grow and to take off a little bit, and just having a family and everything, man, I just have to look at that aspect of it.
Yeah, and I completely understand that. You know, I think priorities are everything, and I don't know if you're anything like me. So this kind of my side hustle, doing the Southern Ground podcast and the YouTube channel and stuff. It's very convenient, even though it is a side hustle. It's convenient because it is something that I truly love to do, which is be outside, chasing animals around, fishing, hunting, doing whatever, talking about it. But it does cause tension, because it is my hobby. It is what I love, but it's also a side hustle. And so it helps.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to explain to people, like I'll give you an example. Last week or Saturday was the opening day of turkey season for the public land that I hunt most of the time. And, a buddy of mine was getting married that same day. And, well, needless to say, I wasn't there. I did not go to the wedding.
Right.
Because, you know, well, you understand it. I'm not telling somebody who doesn't understand. Probably most guys listening to this understand it. But it's hard to justify, hey, this is part of a job that I'm trying to create and I'm trying to have for myself. It's not just going out in the woods and hunting. It is to create content. So, I totally understand. I can imagine it's probably the same for you, man, with building calls and doing that kind of stuff. So
it is, man. It is, you know, at some point somewhere you're going to cross a bridge that's called sacrifice.
Yeah.
And you've got to look at it and you got to say, hey, is it worth it or is it not worth it? You know, and that's a decision that's solely based up to you. And with this sort of turkey hunting, it is so consuming. Something has got to sacrifice most of the time, and a lot of people joke about it, but it's sleep, it's friendships, like you just said, it's work, it's other things, and you've got to look at that and say, hey, is this something that is worth it or is it not worth it, you know? And for every turkey hunter out there, that's kind of part of the game, honestly.
Yep, and I get that way during deer season. Man, I know turkey hunters, though, dude, I'm telling you, they're a different breed. People who are hardcore about turkeys, man, they love them some turkeys. I don't know that any deer hunter can compete.
That's right, man. They are very, very hardcore, and I can't tell you how many guys that I know that, I mean, they hunt every single day of the season, every single day. I'm not one of those guys. I'm hardcore, but I don't hunt every single day. I do hunt a lot, but I don't hunt every single day, you know, but there's a lot of turkey hunters out there like that. There's not a lot of deer hunters. Now, granted, they got, a 90-day season, you know, to go deer hunt, so that's you know, or heck, even longer than that, you know, 120 in some states.
Alabama, man, it seems like deer season goes on forever. But I tell you what, man, if I could hunt every day of turkey season, I probably would do it. I love it. I absolutely love it. They, like we talked about before, they piss me off, man. I can't stand them most of the time. But, golly, it's the feeling that you get. I was talking to my buddy Adam Cruz on our very last episode, and I said this sport of turkey hunting is the most frustrating but the most satisfying thing that probably exists.
Because
man, when you can drop one, there's not a lot of feelings like that. It's so much fun. I love it. So
it is, man, so fun. And just like you said, that feeling that you get, I mean, because most of the time they kill one, and every now and then you have years where you know, it's just like you can't do anything wrong, and you kill your five turkeys if you're in Alabama fast, or however many you're at, whether in whatever state that you're in. But majority of the time, you work extremely hard and put in a lot of hours, a lot of sweat, and a lot of miles on a pair of boots in order to kill that turkey. So when it all comes together, it is so, so worth it.
It is. It is, man. I remember one year in Georgia, I killed one Jake, and I freaking turkey. This was my first year hunting Easterns. And I killed one Jake. Dude, you thought I killed a 150-inch buck. It was insane. I was so jacked up. It was towards the end of the season. I thought I wasn't going to get one, and I made it happen, dude. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. It was. I told my dad at the time, I was like, I don't know that there's any deer that I've ever killed that will compete with this feeling right now. Like, this is ultra satisfying. But it doesn't take long for that to run out. And you're like, I got to get back in
That's
the woods
right.
and chase them again.
That's right. I killed that one on that Thursday. And I'll tell you what, I am chomping at the bit to pull that trigger again.
Yep. I understand. So speaking of that, you know, I'm talking about my first Eastern and things like that, man, there were so many things, you know, going into that season that I wish I would have known. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. How long have you been turkey hunting? Pretty much your whole life?
Man, I killed my first one when I was 7 years old, so I'm 27 now. So I've been turkey hunting for 20 years.
Okay, so 20 years.
Wait. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 20 years.
There's probably not a lot of your life that you remember that you weren't chasing turkeys around.
That's right.
And it sounds like you have a dad that kind of really knew how to teach you how to do it, because he probably grew up doing it. Is that right?
He learned when he was in college, so he had been doing it for a while.
Okay.
Before I came around, his dad didn't turkey hunt, but his dad did start a turkey hunt once when he kind of got into it.
Yeah. So my dad, he's a great hunter. He's not, you know, it's nothing like that. But like I said, we were raised in Texas, and so I was kind of left to figure out Easterns on my own. After I was already out of the house, and there were so many things, dude, that I wish I would have known. And I think about it now, and I feel like I would have killed so many more turkeys if I would have known some of these things. So I told you before that we were going to do, I was going to give you one question, and that is, what is one thing you would tell a brand new turkey hunter? But I'm going to ask you, if you will, if we can just extend that a little bit, can you tell me two things that you would tell a brand new turkey hunter?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of one of those things, and I dealt with this weekend with this mentor turkey hunt that we put on, and gosh, there's so many things that you want to tell somebody, you know, especially somebody that's getting into a sport like this that's very hard to learn on your own, because at the reality of it, that's what it is. Like, trying to learn the sport of turkey hunting and the art of turkey hunting is really, really tough unless you have a mentor.
Yeah.
And if you just narrow it down to one or two things, gosh, that's so hard to do. But I would say for me, a lot of people ask, and I'll be honest, I don't kill a lot of turkeys a year as compared to a lot of people. You know, I kill a handful of birds a year. But as compared to my friends, I kill more than them, it seems like. And one of the questions that they ask me is, how do you kill so many turkeys? And a lot of times when I look at how they hunt, or I talk to them on the phone, and I'm like, hey, man, did you go this morning? They're like, no, it was raining. No, it was windy. No, it was kind of cold. And I'm like, man, like, you are missing opportunities to hunt. And I can't tell you how many times I've probably killed just as many turkeys in the rain as I have the sunshine.
Wow.
And it's kind of one of those things. The more times that you go, the more opportunity that you're going to have. to kill a turkey and to learn something. So honestly, that's going to be my first piece of advice, is to hunt as much as you can, as often as you can, every single day, if you can, regardless of the weather, regardless of the conditions. Like, turkeys are turkeys. They're out there. They're doing their thing. And if you go, you're going to have an opportunity to kill one at some point in time. So don't get discouraged if it's raining. Don't get discouraged if it's cold. Don't get discouraged if it's 90 degrees for some reason on April. Like, just get out there and go and give yourself that chance, because I promise you, like, you're not going to regret it at the end of the day. You're not going to come back and say, dang, I wish I didn't go. Because at the least, like, you got out in nature, you enjoyed it, you know, you hiked around a little bit, and you probably learned something new.
Yeah.
So that's going to be my first piece of advice. The second piece is kind of hard to say, honestly, because like I said just a minute ago, there's so many different things. I would say the second piece of advice is honestly turkeys work on turkey time. And I read this in an article or a book or somewhere a long time ago, but turkeys do. Like, they don't have a watch on their hand saying, hey, we got to be here by 12:30, you know, mm-hmm. or we got to be back up on this bench by 5 o'clock this evening. Like, turkeys work on turkey time. And so patience is a key to killing them. And one thing that I've learned within that patience is it may not necessarily mean sitting there all day long waiting for that turkey to break from where it's at. Patience may be evaluating the situation, saying, hey, this turkey's got six hens with him right now. He's going down this bench to the north, right? These woods are really, really open, and I don't have a lot of cover, so I'm going to have to do a big loop, but I've only got an hour to hunt, you know, before I got to get to work or something. So instead of pushing the limits and maybe bumping that turkey, you know, and spooking him, and basically what you're doing is educating that turkey, patience is going to be, to me, being able to look at that situation and saying, hey, I'm not going to push the limits today. I'm not going to spook him. I'm not going to educate him. I'm going to come back tomorrow, and I'm going to try him again because he's most likely going to be pretty close to this area.
Mm-hmm.
So patience is a lot more than just, you know, sitting there all day long, not moving, that type of thing. But turkeys work on turkey time, man, and being out there in the field is going to give you a good opportunity, being patient with them, you know. And like I said, sometimes it is, you know, maybe sitting there for an hour longer than you normally would, or maybe you've got trail camera pictures of a turkey in this area every day at the same time, and, you know, he hasn't shown for some reason that day, and you say, hey, I need to sit one more hour, or I need to sit 30 more minutes. But just being patient with them, don't push the limit, don't educate them, because the moment that you start educating a turkey and putting that pressure per se on them is the moment that they start to realize that their gobbling is attracting not only hens, but other things,
mm-hmm.
you know, other things out there as well, you know, things being us, you know, things
yeah.
trying to kill them,
yeah.
basically. And, man, when you start educating them, when you start spooking them, they become extremely hard to kill.
Yeah. And to that, I'm going to go ahead and say that they become extremely hard to kill as soon as they're born. And then if you educate them, they're almost impossible to kill. In my experience, anyways.
That's very true.
In my experience,
yeah.
That's it.
That's
so, well, dude, that's really good stuff. So if y'all are new to turkey hunting, I can't tell you, Drew, how many people I've talked to this year who have told me they're going to start turkey hunting this year. Actually, the two guys that co-host with me, Michael Pike and Tyler Malone, have both never really been into turkey hunting, and they started this year. There's so many people out there that are new to this. So if you're listening to this and you're new to it, man, take these things that Drew's talked about here right towards the end of this podcast and put it to work. I can tell you the very most important lesson I learned is exactly what Drew just talked about. Don't wait for perfect conditions. You're wasting opportunities every single time. And that's something that is a little bit different, Drew, than deer. You know, so many times you hear, like, don't go in unless the conditions are perfect. And a lot of people do believe that. I don't believe that fully, but a lot of people do that. They're not going to go in unless the wind is right, the weather's right, the barometric pressure's right. That's just kind of how a lot of people hunt. But with turkeys, mm-hmm. man, I cannot tell you, same thing, how many times I've seen birds in the rain, in the high winds, in overcast, in hot, in cold, all that stuff. Turkey's going to do what a turkey's going to do. And mm-hmm. it's up to us to be out there. So I think, man, that's such a good thing to end on. That's probably the most important lesson that I've ever learned. So, all right, Drew, we are getting close to time to wrap this thing up. But is there anything else that you wanted to mention? Anything you want to talk about to end this podcast?
Man, I would just say, as far as like the calls go, mouth calls go, everybody's different. Everybody runs air across those reeds a little bit different. So try everything until you find what you like, as far as cuts or combos, latex combination, things like that. But don't be afraid to try new stuff as far as calling goes, or that type of thing. Just, you know, pick it up, learn it, especially if you're new at it. You know, really dig into it, and the more that you do it, the more you'll gain experience at it, honestly.
So where could somebody go to find out more information on y'all's calls and on Foot on the Head and everything like that?
Yeah, so we've got an Instagram page where we post a lot of stuff. We're actually running a photo contest this spring. So all of the details are on Instagram and on Facebook for that. We've got a Facebook page. We've got our website, footontheheadhead.com, so you can check all the products out there. Man, if you've got any questions, people can reach out to me via Facebook, via website, any of those channels right there I can be reached on. I kind of run over this real quick, but a lot of people ask me, hey, what's your best-selling call? What do you recommend call-wise? I'll tell you the calls that I keep in my vest that I hunt with. Mouth call-wise, I keep a two-reed batwing call in my vest. I've got three or four of them in there, actually. It's called the Legend. That's what I sell it under the name of it on my website. That call is the Legend.
Okay.
I also yelp on a call that we have called the Trinity. It's a three-reed batwing call. And then I've got a call that's called Hooked. It's also a three-reed batwing call with a different stretch and a different combination of latex on it. Out of all those calls, the Legend is my absolute favorite. Out of all the calls that I sell, my best-selling call is called the Samson. It's just a split V three recall. It's by far the absolute most raspy call that I sell, which a lot of people really like, a raspy old hen. And so that's going to be that call. As far as pot calls go, I run an aluminum surface that's over a glass soundboard. That's my favorite pot call out there. And then my second favorite, a ceramic over glass. Those calls are kind of opposite. The aluminum is real loud, real raspy, kind of like a shrill sound to it. The ceramic is a lot like slate. It grabs really well. It's real grippy, so you can get that soft tree talk on it, those real soft burrs and clucks, tree yelp, things like that. But it'll also reach out there, and it has a piercing, high-pitched yelp to it. So they're kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, which is why I keep them in my vest. And then I've got a walnut box with yellow heart inlays, and then in my vest, it's kind of a medium road call. It's not real raspy, but it's not real clear. You get kind of the best of both worlds type thing. So that's kind of what I keep in my vest. Some of our best sellers go as far as mouth calls go. So I hope that really helps.
Yeah, man, that's actually pretty perfect. That was in depth, and man, so if you guys are interested, go check out Foot on the Head. These guys do some really cool stuff. Drew's putting together some awesome products, and like we said before, next week, starting on Monday, we're going to be giving away this package, and correct me if I'm wrong, it is bronze glass. Is that right?
Yeah, bronze glass over slate.
So
got a feather in it.
So this is gonna be a really cool call. So somebody's gonna be lucky to get it. Drew, man, yeah. I cannot tell you thanks enough for coming on the show. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I know our listeners are gonna enjoy that as well.
Yeah, man. Well, I really appreciate you having me on, man. It's been a pleasure to be able to talk turkey hunting with you and to talk about the calls and everything. And again, I just really appreciate you asking me to be on.
Absolutely, man. We'll have to do it again sometime.
All right, sounds good, Parker.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later. All right, a big, huge thanks to Mr. Drew Abel from Foot on the Head. We really enjoyed that conversation, and I hope you guys did too. As Drew talked about, we're doing a giveaway. We're giving away next week. We're going to be giving away some cool stuff from Foot on the Head. So go and check out their website. I think you're going to like what you see. If you're into turkey hunting, you'd like a good solid turkey call, go and check them out at Foot on the Head. And man, you have a chance to win some really cool stuff from them next week on the Southern Ground Facebook page. So go and do that. It's going to be super easy. The rules are not, it's not big, long rules or anything. It's not a whole lot of stuff that you have to do. But go check that out. You can win something from Foot on the Head as well as something from all the other companies that have been that we're partnering with for this Gobblebutt giveaway. It's a really cool thing, and I'm actually really impressed with these companies that have been willing to send us really good stuff. They're not sending us crap. They're sending us really good stuff. Last week we gave away like $100 Woodhaven pot call, and it's just been really, really cool to talk to these companies, talk to their representatives, and I don't think you'll be disappointed. The worst thing that can happen is you could not win, but you still get to follow the Southern Ground Facebook page and see all the cool stuff that we're doing. So speaking of cool stuff, we've got a video coming up, like I've already mentioned, video coming up of the bird that I killed yesterday, and it'll be on the YouTube channel. That is the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. Go check that out. We've got some cool content already on there, as well as we just added another contributor to the Sportsman's Nation on the podcast network and on the YouTube channel, and that's Hybrid Outdoors. Now, Bob is a native of Michigan. He lives in northern Michigan, so we've actually got northern Michigan, which is like one of the highest points in the U.S., and then we've got Dan in Iowa in the Midwest, and then you've got us in Alabama hunting all over the South. So you really have a very broad spectrum of content that you can get on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. So go and check that out. Subscribe, like our videos, share our videos, let people know what we're doing. That's about all I got. As always, big huge shout out to our partners at Onyx, at Tethered, at New Breed Archery, and at Go Wild. Check out those companies. We believe in them. We believe what they do. They do really good things. So we would love it if you would support those companies. Now, with New Breed Archery, you can now receive $50 off of your bow if you tell them, if you use the code Southern Ground Hunting. That's all you got to do. You can get $50 off of your bow purchase. And we're about the time of year when you need to start looking at your new gear, getting new equipment if that's what you're looking for, and I highly recommend New Breed Archery for your next bow purchase. So you guys have a great week. Remember, God gave us dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beast of the earth. So go out and exercise that dominion. We will talk to you next time.